time for Sports Lit 101. Rich Kimble, Bruce Pratt here. Our next guest is a baseball historian. We've talked about a number of his books, Urban Shocker, Silent Hero of Baseball's Golden Age. The first book that he co-wrote with Lyle Spatz, The Colonel and the Hug, the partnership that transformed the New York Yankees. And while we've devoted a couple of segments, we liked it so much, to his newest, Comeback Pitchers, The Remarkable Careers of Howard Emke and Jack Quinn. We're happy to welcome Steve Steinberg back to the program. Hello, Steve.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
We love this book so much. What drew you and Lyle to the story of these two particular pitchers?
Well, you know, Lyle and I have always enjoyed uncovering people that have been forgotten and maybe haven't gotten the due attention that they deserve. And Jack Quinn and Howard Emke are really two remarkable guys who really are less famous than any of the ballplayers that we've written about in the past. Really compelling stories, and that even transcend baseball in terms of their determination when they were repeatedly told that they're no good, they're too old, they're washed up, and they just kept on going and kept on excelling.
You also like a period in history, which you and Lyle are quite good at researching, that, and that's the first half of the 20th century in baseball. And what is it about that era, besides finding people who need more attention, what is it about that era that really draws you to it?
Well, we actually focus on probably the first quarter of the 20th century, because we rarely get beyond the 1930s or even into the 1930s. But it's just, baseball had so many of the superstars that are really icons today, even though people like Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, you know, we're not writing a book focusing on them, and especially this book, Cobb, is very much a factor in there. And, we have a lot of remarkable photographs also. There's just something about this era that's very evocative about the timeless quality of the game, and it just has always drawn us to it for that reason.
Howard Emke is such a fascinating guy. And, of course, up here in Red Sox country, we look back at those years he had, and my goodness, he pitched on some terrible teams. But in the present day, he would probably make a lot of money because, while he didn't always get the wins, those peripheral numbers were always incredibly good.
Yeah, and, he had some seasons that he didn't pitch with a heavy workload because of different kind of arm problems. Mm-hmm. But when he was feeling okay, he was quite outstanding.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting is the way you looked at how they became who they became based on where they began. I mean, Quinn is born in Slovakia. He ends up being raised essentially in Mahanoy, Pennsylvania, up in what people in Pennsylvania call the Regents. Emke's from the little town of Silver Creek, New York. Do you think when baseball was more popular and every town had a team, that stories like that were more common than they are today?
Yeah, not only did every town have a team, every town had multiple teams. Sandlot and semi-pro baseball on weekends was just about everywhere. And as you said, basketball and football were in their infancy, even if that, and baseball was truly the national pastime. And, that's where all the focus. And, fans, baseball was what they followed. The only other sports that, would garner big headlines were horse racing and boxing, and obviously for the youth of America, they were not that compelling. And certainly boxing, just when it was here, for a few days if there was a big fight, and then there'd be a gap of a long period of time.
One of the other things that I think about that period of time, excuse me, is how it became an immigrant's game in so many ways, that we look in the wherever it was played, that many people, that was a way to become an American, was to learn and to play baseball. That doesn't seem to be as important today.
That's an interesting question. I haven't given that a lot of thought about the ball game today. Of course, we have so many Latino ball players. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that, at least my initial thought is that maybe they see that same vehicle. Howard Emke came from a middle-class family in upstate New York. His brothers had played for Brown University, and he was expected to go there. He ended up on the West Coast and then got into the Pacific Coast League. But Jack Quinn was the ultimate story because he actually changed his name. He was from Eastern Europe, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and Quinn was sort of the best kind of name because at that time the Irish even though at one time they were immigrants looked down upon, by the early 1900s, the Irish were established Americans, and he took that name, to become part of the mainstream.
Jack Quinn is so remarkable, too, when you look at his late career work. My goodness. Now, Satchel Paige broke some of his records, but what Quinn did to stay at that level for such a long time and be pitching into his late 40s, yeah, I mean, knuckleballers might be able to get away with that, but for him to do it at that time, too, when travel was much more difficult, it really is a remarkable story.
Yeah, and he was a real fitness fanatic. Obviously, in those days, they didn't have nearly the knowledge and the nutritionists and the trainers they have nowadays, but he really took care of himself, and he also did so during the off-season. He always said that when he went hunting in the mountains of northeastern Pennsylvania, it was more to stay in shape than it was, to hunt game per se. And the spitball was his main pitch, and it turned out that the spitball really was not as hard on the arm as some people were claiming when they wanted to ban the spitball in the teens. And he's not in the Hall of Fame. Both Quinn and Emke are very good pitchers, perhaps not great pitchers that deserve the Hall of Fame. But you look at the guys that pitched into their 40s that are in the Hall of Fame, like Red Faber and Burley Grimes, and of course, Shocker died before his career was finished. The spitball was actually a pretty easy pitch that protected them.
One of the things that Quinn kept noting is that control was more important than anything else. And I was thinking about how these guys could pitch in some years over 300 innings. You can't find a pitcher today that seems to want to go 200. Do you think it's the difference that they had a lot of pitches and we have so many pitchers today just trying to throw heat?
Boy, that's a wonderful question. I think that could be the case. And unfortunately, even though baseball has such a wonderful database of statistics, one thing that we don't have is we don't have the pitch count for every game. It would be nice if we could go to the box scores. And Retro Sheet is a volunteer effort that has gotten the box scores and now even the play-by-play of so many games going back. But my sense is that there were a lot less pitches thrown a game. And in a nine-inning game back in 1920, perhaps the average number of pitches thrown in nine innings was comparable to what was the number that are thrown in five innings today. They just put the ball in play, and very few pitchers were really strikeout artists. And sometimes a pitcher would strike out 150 guys, and he'd lead the league in strikeouts in that time.
We're talking with Steve Steinberg about his book, Comeback Pitchers, written with Lyle Spatz. And you mentioned the pictures. There are some incredible photographs in the book. But I think my favorite is one that just came from you, and that's the image of the wonderful letter and the story behind it that you got from former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens.
Yeah, that I had picked up somewhere during our research the fact that in the 1929 World Series, there was this little boy, he was 9 years old, born in 1920, that went to the first baseball game that he had ever seen in his life. He was a Cubs fan, and it was game one of the World Series, and he was pretty devastated because Howard Emke had a stunning and surprise performance in that game. And I actually tracked Judge Stevens down in 2016, I believe. It was, when the Cubs finally won the World Championship, and he was actually at game five, I think it was, because 6 and 7 were not in Chicago, and they showed him on TV very briefly. A remarkable guy who loved the game and was able to live. It's pretty amazing to say that I talked to someone 87 years after he was at a game, but that's pretty special. And whenever we have and then we lose these people, we really lose part of the history. It's pretty remarkable.
You mentioned part of the history. One of the things that I think is so outstanding about your books and your book with Lyle is that you combine the history with the time. American studies students would do well to read these books because you put things in context of the time. When you think back to Emke's row and his problems with Ty Cobb and the like, do you think any player could have that kind of relationship with the manager today and we wouldn't all know all the details?
Yeah, that really is a great question. It's hard to give a definitive answer, and you know, things are different nowadays with social media. But and of course, we seem to be seeing a trend among managers that people that had the personality of Ty Cobb probably would not, you know, become managers. And it's people that are more flexible and are willing to listen to their players. And of course, Cobb was, like, in some ways was unique, but in other ways, like many managers that were just so good and they couldn't relate to or understand why people that while others weren't as good as they were. And of course, he had the intensity, and Howard Emke may have had a fire burning inside of him, but it was a very so to speak, a low flame. And he and Cobb were like oil and water, and Cobb was his manager and traded him away in what was really a terrible trade for Cobb's Tigers, and he went to Boston. But the big thing is that Quinn and Emke in the late 1920s, when everybody thought they were washed up, Connie Mack of the Philadelphia Athletics saw something there, and he picked them both up for virtually nothing. And they helped him as the A's rose to really become a dominant team.
I think it's interesting, too, to learn that as intense as Emke could be, especially in his dealings with Ty Cobb, as a citizen and as an ex-ball player, seemed to be about as down-to-earth and as good a person as one could ever hope for.
Yeah, and I think both these guys were. And it's interesting because our main focus here is the 1920s, and we think of the Jazz era and the era of celebrities. And these fellows were both quite low-key. They didn't talk a lot, and they certainly didn't try to be in the limelight. They just were professionals that wanted to go out and do their work. And, you know, you bring up the question about 300 innings. You know, it's always fascinated me that back in this era, sure, there were arm problems, and sure, there were some careers that were ended, but it is sort of puzzling how these guys would pitch with such a workload. And by and large, it doesn't seem like there were more injuries and career-ending injuries than there are nowadays. And I can't really explain that.
When guys would go nine innings and you had a four-man rotation, but managers didn't always adhere to that either. And if you were the ace, you might go on 1 or 2 days rest.
Right, and you might go beyond nine innings if the game went into extra innings, which happened quite often.
One of the things, too, that's about this book that's interesting is Emke was never a real healthy person. He always had a lot of different woes and issues with his weight and the flu and all those kinds of things, and died young. And then you get Quinn, who took great care of himself. He loses his wife in a freaking tragic way and then just crawls into a bottle and dies. I mean, is that in part why he was forgotten? Because there isn't really a long Jack Quinn afterlife, if you will?
You know, I don't know. I guess I would probably say not, simply because he just never, you know, garnered a lot of headlines when, you know, during this career. And let's keep in mind, as good as the Philadelphia Athletics of 1929 through 1931 were, and you could argue that they were as good as the Yankees of the late 20s, you know, it still wasn't New York. Philadelphia wasn't New York. And, you know, players that played for the Yankees or even the Giants back in the 20s, they just got more World Series appearances. They had more, you know, more publicity in the nation's biggest city.
Well, it's a wonderful read. It's a great look at a couple of very interesting and underappreciated ballplayers, but also a fascinating time in our history. The book is Comeback Pitchers, The Remarkable Careers of Howard Emke and Jack Quinn. Steve Steinberg, thank you so much for visiting with us today.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about these remarkable guys.
Lyle Spatz and Steve Steinberg, the authors of Comeback Pitchers, here on Sports Lit 101.